This week's guest is 22-year-old bassist Daisy Pepper. Having gained over 50,000 followers since the lockdown in 2020, Daisy has been able to use her platform to find some incredible work opportunities. In the episode, we not only dive into who Daisy is, both as a musician and a person, but we also talk about some really important topics. We talk very openly and vulnerably about the reality of being a woman online and acknowledge that the constant need for interaction and follower growth is actually incredibly toxic. I have really loved having this conversation with Daisy, and I genuinely think that there's a lot that you guys can take from it. The first question is always the same on my podcast because I feel like context is important. So how did you get into music? Because I know you play guitar and you play bass.
Yes.
You probably play more. What was the background of that? How did you get into them?
Well, ever since I don't even know how old I was, because obviously when you're younger, everything kind of just jumbles together.
Mm-hmm.
But I've loved music, metal, rock, pop, everything. Since I was very, very young, I've always had an ear for it. I kind of felt like I understood how music sounded at a really young age.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just very aware that I was, like, interested in it. I didn't know that I wanted to be a musician, but I just knew that it was something important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning guitar at 6.
Wow.
And I quickly gave up because, I don't know, I just, my brain didn't compute the strings fingers thing.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot.
It was a lot, and there were group lessons, and everyone else in the room had kind of already been learning for a while.
Oh no.
And it was kind of like, I would literally sit in the lessons just doing this. Not, the left hand was not doing anything. I just didn't.
Oh, you were just strumming?
I was literally just strumming, pretending to do like a good job, and the teacher totally could see right through it. So I think after a year of that, whatever that is, I think I stopped. I thought I'd come back to it. We kept the guitar. It was like a little tiny mm-hmm. pink. It was a 3/4 scale tiny
so
pink.
So iconic.
I know. Yeah. It had to be pink because obviously.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm pretty sure my cousin had one, the exact same one. I never did, sadly, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's just, you know, you had to have the colour that represented you the best. And I chose
uh-huh,
pink.
Definitely.
I love pink. And tiny guitar, tiny person. And we kept it. I still had it, I think, up until I was 15 or something, and then we mm-hmm. sort of sold it on or whatever. But didn't touch that for a while. Started learning then trumpet, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Not many people. I don't really boast about it because I can't play it anymore.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Neither. I did that up till grade. I think I took grade 3, or I might have gone mm-hmm. up to grade 3. I can't remember. That was a, was I 9 or 10? Again, the years kind of all jumbled together.
Yeah,
same
along
thing. Those lines. You know, when you take up a new instrument at that sort of age anyway.
Uh-huh.
And I played that up until I was maybe 13, so quite a while. But to be honest, I just never practiced it because it was loud and kind of...
I was going to say,
it's just
really
one of those
obnoxious.
Instruments. Like, how do you practice a trumpet? Like, obviously, you do it, but it was just so... If you messed up, everyone and your neighbour can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just kind of put me off, so I never really practiced. But I was in a couple
yeah.
of orchestras, so I was kind of learning to play alongside people with that instrument. So I guess that kind of helped the whole playing bass kind of thing in a band, being aware of
yeah.
the musicians and sounds around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that same time I started learning piano as well. We had a piano in the house, we still do. And I started learning the keys, and I was pretty decent at it. Never took grades. Again,
mm-hmm.
kind of just
I'm horrible
practice.
At it.
Yeah, I was good at the start, but as soon as it started mm-hmm. getting like intricate, I think I quit
yeah.
while I was learning Claire de Lune. Very specific, but that's the song I learned.
That's very specific.
I remember in the lesson, I was just like, you know what, this ain't for me.
Yeah,
get me
I'm done now.
Restaurant. Yeah.
Next one.
Yeah, next. And then as that sort of, I think I stopped that at a similar time as trumpet. I think I was just going through like a teenage crisis of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Like I need something more contemporary. And I started learning guitar, I think, shortly after. I mean, I don't know about your school, because we're the same age, so it might be the same
mm-hmm.
thing. But we all started kind of collectively learning ukulele. It was very much, I feel like, the secondary school thing to play. So
yeah, actually I don't think we ever did in our music lessons. It
oh,
was
what?
Keys, and then we did guitar lessons for a very short period, and those lessons were the reason why I started learning guitar.
Oh my god, we've got a similar origin story.
Yeah.
I love that.
There's so many similarities with us. It's just so cool that we're like sat talking.
Oh my gosh. This is so cool because I've literally obviously the same way as playing bass.
Really?
So, yeah, because we started all collectively doing ukulele. That's kind of all I knew was ukulele chords, and I was pretty decent at it, which was really confusing because I was not great at guitar when I was six. So then being like 13 and then suddenly taking on ukulele and just being good at it, I was kind of like, what's going on here? How's this work? So I got an acoustic guitar, but I couldn't play acoustic chords, so I used to put a capo on the 10th fret, I think, and play the ukulele chords on that. Which is,
I've never tried to do that.
It doesn't sound amazing, but it doesn't sound bad. Uh-huh. And it probably just works. Something in theory will explain it. I'm sure a theory head out there can explain why that works, but it just did.
In the comments. No, I'm joking.
In the comments. Leave a like how that works. And then obviously I started to grow up and actually learn proper guitar chords. I think I bought an electric guitar. And I was kind of like loving it, doing my thing, you know, whatever. And in school, one of my music teachers started up a bass club to try and get more girls on bass, teach more bass. He played bass himself.
I love that.
I know, love it. I'm so grateful for it. And they had a couple basses at the school and I picked one up and he was like, you're kind of a natural.
Mm.
And I was like, ooh, I like that. Went and bought a bass that evening, a little Ibanez.
Wow.
SR, yeah. Because I tried practicing the bass on my acoustic, and obviously, as you can imagine, that didn't really work out. So no. I get excited talking about it because I remember the feeling of that bug of like, oh my God, I really love this. I feel like I can do this. And I love that bass. And it was really cool. It was blue and it looked so pretty. I was like, you know what? Guitar, take a back seat. I'm gonna be a bassist. Speaking of, I've got all guitars behind me currently, but I am a bassist, I promise.
That's really funny. That's similar to me. I think I have more guitars than basses on my rack and I hardly play them.
I'm exactly the same. Really, it's funny. Really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very weird. I don't know how it happened, but it did.
Yeah, well, if you get into guitar first, I guess it's kind of like you get this excitement for it, but then the bass comes and you're like, whoa.
The feeling's not even comparable. Like when I first picked up the bass, because I picked up the bass in lockdown, I was like, I've never felt like this playing guitar before.
Yeah.
And it was just like I didn't want to put it down. And I think similarly to what your teacher said to you, is like a little bit of a natural ability. Like it came so much easier to me than guitar did.
Totally.
And I think that just made it like, it's so cool that you went and got one the same day.
I know. I mean, yeah, it was very impulsive, but I think I was just kind of like to my parents, I was like, I need to explore this. Like my teacher said this to me, and it was those words that really, I think, flipped the switch, because I was like, oh, I'm good at something. You know what I mean? Like it was proof that I'd been playing it for 10 minutes. And he was like, you're really good at this. And I was like, how can I be? And I mean, I wasn't at all great at guitar at this point either. I mean, all I could really play was some chords. The chords were well, but you know, I couldn't play bar chords or whatever. I hadn't quite got to that point yet. I guess my journey was a bit later on. Obviously not in lockdown sort of thing, but I think the learning sort of started at 14. But I started from not really knowing anything, going from playing ukulele chords on a guitar. That was kind of the
background. I love that. That's so funny. I kind of really want to try it now that you've said that.
I know. I mean, I'm kind of tempted to like revisit it and see how it is, because I love playing ukulele. It's so fun and cute.
Yeah.
And I've still got it.
I think you should post it on Instagram. The reel will go viral. We're like, wow.
There we go.
Ukulele on guitar. Yeah. There you've got it. Solved all the problems.
Noted.
That's so funny. Yeah. Now, if you actually do that, I'd find that hilarious.
I'd do a teaching Layla how to play ukulele chords on a guitar.
Yeah. I'd love that. I mean, if you want to dedicate the reel to me, I'll take it. Yes. Awesome. I feel like I'd have to do one in return. I don't know what I'd
do. That'd be so funny.
We'd have just an inside joke going on Instagram where people are like,
what's
going on? All right.
Watch the podcast. You'll see.
Yeah. That is a really good way to promote the podcast, though, actually.
Yeah.
I've been trying to think how to promote them better, so...
Just doing little, like, cameo kind of, we spoke about this in here, and here's the result of us actually attempting it, and stuff like that. That'd be kind of cool. Oh. I'm totally down.
Amazing. I love how we're, like, we're using this time to think about content like
this. It's all about the content.
God, that's what our lives have come to. Content, content, content.
Literally.
Oh, that's so funny. Do you think if that teacher that encouraged you to play bass, do you think if he hadn't said to you that natural ability comment, do you think you still would have stuck to bass?
I probably would have, because I think I felt a connection to the instrument, and like I'd always said, I'd loved music anyway, so I was always very aware of bands and everything. I mean, to be fair, I didn't know what a bass guitar was before that club. I really didn't, because...
A lot of people don't.
I'm not really sure why, because like I said, I loved music and I'd listened to metal and rock, which is obviously very bass heavy. So I'm kind of confused how I just didn't. I'm guessing I just thought of it as a guitar and not really gone as a bass guitar. But yeah, I wasn't exposed to bass until that moment. Maybe that's why it was kind of like this missing puzzle piece of like listening to music and loving it and wanting to take it further, but not sure how. And maybe that was it, of like that moment of finding out what a bass guitar is and being like, oh, eureka, oh my gosh, this exists. Like now I know what I need.
I feel like a lot of people only notice the bass when it's missing, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of music you listen to, bass is there, it's present. And like the average person, say, who isn't a musician, probably doesn't even realise that that's the part of the song that's like really getting you to enjoy.
Totally, yeah.
The music. And then say if you was to listen to the same thing and the bass be missing, that's when you notice it. I think that's one of the things I really love about bass, is that it's kind of like the hidden hero.
Yeah, you're like, you're not in the background, but you're the saviour of the band. Like without you, it'd fall apart. 100%.
Yeah. We're a little bit biased there, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're we're really good, but I don't know.
Yeah. So does music run in your family in any way, or?
Yeah, a bit. I mean, my mum played piano and she sings. Mm-hmm. She still sings, actually. She sings in a choir.
Just like, I don't know why I said, oh, but that's cute.
Wholesome moments.
Yeah, literally.
So she's always been quite musical. She went to, like, music universities and everything. Mm. Obviously not her final job, but the music element was there. My dad, I think, didn't play any instruments too seriously. I think he played the violin growing up for a tiny bit, and a bit of guitar. But again, nothing too serious. So he's always loved music anyway. They both love music. They're massive music lovers, and it's, you know, it's just been one of those things. That's how I got introduced to music, is playing, you know, the old MTV channels and Stars when it was on TV and everything, and Kerrang and whatnot. We just kind of always had the music playing on the TV channels. So things like that, just kind of the influence is definitely there, but I think the creative element was like, it's finalised here. And I kind of just took both of those influences and went, boom, musician. The element was definitely there, but not, they weren't music parents, like they weren't musician parents. So there was no like...
So they didn't like massively influence you in any way?
To play necessarily, no. I mean, they probably brought up the guitar. I mean, I can't remember what made me play guitar in the first place. I have a feeling it was something to do with Metallica and Enter Sandman and all that. I have a feeling that was an element there somewhere, of just this bright idea to play. I don't remember the conversation of like, should I play guitar? Do I want to play guitar? I don't know. I was six, so I can't really remember that sort of level of detail.
Maybe they won't remember.
I was going to say, I don't think they'll remember either, actually, to be fair.
No, it's a very specific thing to ask them to remember. Maybe they do. I don't know, it's worth asking them anyway.
It was a defining moment at some point in the timeline, I think. I don't really know if I gained anything from those lessons. I can't, like, I just don't know if I, like I said, I think the only thing I actually successfully learned was I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas.
I love that.
Very random, again. I don't know why I can remember such random details. But, like, the intro bit was like, da, 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 da. I just remember playing that in, like, little two note things. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I should try relearning that again. Brain explodes.
I think you should. I think the first song we learned when just before I picked up the bass when we were doing it in music class, it was a One Direction song.
Love that.
Was it the one that, what's it called? That's What Makes You Beautiful? Was it that one? I don't know.
Absolutely.
I feel like it was. Yeah, I feel like I should also try and redo that one. It's such a weird song to choose. They're both very random songs.
I don't know. I mean, their song Rock Me has got a pretty driven guitar bass part. You know, that would be a cool song. I mean, I was a massive Directioner when I was growing up, so.
Were you?
Boy bands.
I was JLS.
Something about, oh, really? Oh, yeah. Love that.
Major JLS fan.
Love that. I feel like you could get some cool bass lines out of Beat Again. I feel like that would be kind of a bit of a probably funky element. What other songs?
It's funny. It's funny now because, like, I wouldn't say JLS now is my music taste, but definitely back then, definitely was.
Do you know what? I've got the same thing of, I, again, very much into my rock and metal, but I loved, like, you covered the Jonas Brothers the other day, loved them growing up, Big Time Rush, you know, all the Disney and Nickelodeon stars.
I love Big Time
stars.
Rush as well. Yeah.
And, like, listening to them now, I still do. They're probably going to be in my top played artists on Spotify now. But, like, when you listen to them while you're a musician, you hear things and you go, do you know what?
Yeah.
Actually, this song's kind of got a good bass line or a good guitar solo. And you just don't hear it when you're younger, but when you're actually a musician and you actually analyse them, they're actually pretty decent songs in production-wise and everything. So it's kind of cool to listen to them and have a bit of variation, you know, go from death metal to Boyfriend by Big Time Rush, you know, in the same playlist. I love it.
Oh, that's such an iconic song. Now, that's me with the Jonas Brothers now, like, I obviously listened to them when I was younger, but the stuff they're putting out now, I'm like, now that I say I'm in, like, the music scene as a musician, I mean, I don't know why I still feel uncomfortable calling myself that.
Own it.
Yeah, I'm owning it. That's what I'm going to take from this. I'm going to take a leaf out of Daisy's book and just own it.
I'm a musician.
being a musician now, listening to Jonas Brothers stuff, I'm like, it is actually really incredible. Like,
Absolutely.
Yeah, covering Waffle House, I had a great time.
And I know, it comes out really soon. Because I've been wanting to cover some old tunes from, you know, all those bands and everything. And, like, I've just kind of been like, ooh, should I not? And then I saw your cover and I was like, you know what? I'm doing it.
It's a sign.
I have to do it. I've been thinking about it. It's a sign. I have to do it. So
definitely.
They're coming. The pop covers are coming.
Yeah. I think as well, though, doing that, were you thinking about whether it would be received well by your followers? Because obviously it's a personal thing for you wanting to cover Jonas Brothers and stuff.
Yeah.
Was that why you were hesitant about it?
Pretty much. I think that's the main thing about it. Because obviously I've kind of, the videos that sort of did well back in the day were all metal and rock, so I kind of think most of my followers are interested in that sort of stuff, but I'm in a different place now, so I'm kind of who cares sort of thing. I'm gonna post what I want. So there's kind of a conflicted element of that, but I'm just kind of telling myself to get over it and just do it, because it'll be fun and I'll clearly enjoy it, because I've done some pop things, but, you know, it's how they're received, and I'm kind of like, oh, who cares, man, just as long as you're enjoying playing the song, and it's something different too.
Yeah, exactly. That's so relatable to me, because I think about that. Recently, I've had a really bad problem with that, is I was putting what I think would be received well first before what I'd want to play.
Totally.
Because I know if I do a cover of the classic Lions that, you know, everybody knows, I know they'll be received well because, one, everybody knows them, and my followers tend to be older in age. So they really appreciate someone, you know, enjoying that music. But then I'm also like, I'd love to cover this, like, semi-independent artist or this song from my playlist that, like, nobody else is going to know. But, yeah, that's been a really recent struggle for me, actually, and only recently I've been like, why do I care so much?
Yeah.
Just cover what I want to cover, and the response will be good, because they'll know that I'm enjoying playing what I'm playing.
Exactly, and that's all that matters at the end of the day, isn't it, really? I think we get so skewed over the numbers and the views and the likes and the followers, and actually at the end of the day, as long as you're having a good time and you're posting stuff that you think represents you well as a musician and your taste and your passion for the instrument, then realistically, like, it doesn't matter, you know, and people, I think, will appreciate the realness of it and posting what you want.
Yeah.
Because so much of it now is based around what, you know, suits the algorithm best and all the fancy mm-hmm. editing and stuff. And actually, you should be able to just do what you want, you know, and just focus yeah. on your self-expression and your love for the instrument and not lose sight of that. But, you know, it's a downside, I guess, to social media.
yeah, you can get so caught up on the numbers, you really can. But obviously yeah. I've been combating or trying to combat that now. Because really, you've got either I can focus on growing my numbers and playing stuff that particularly I don't necessarily want to play. I like playing but don't necessarily would choose to play that and grow my numbers. Or the alternative is, like, be authentic and cover songs that I like, still have an audience and them being a really genuine and authentic audience. Because in doing that, I'm going to grow more traction to my page of people that are going to continue to expect something from me that isn't me.
Yeah, kind of like a false promise, and then yeah, you're exactly. stuck. Totally.
Yeah, like what you were saying with the rock stuff that was getting the views on your page initially.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I could cover rock for the rest of my life and love it. But, you know, I think just having that variation in what you play, because especially when it comes to getting hired for stuff, you know, you've got to be able to be that sort of flexible of, oh, yeah, it's a different genre to what I normally like. But, you know, I can still enjoy it because I'm playing bass. And it's, you know, a song's yeah. a song if it's got a good bass line. And what does it matter if it's singing or rapping or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's music and it can be enjoyable yeah. regardless if you let it be enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people have just got to be more open-minded and just go, do you know what? Yeah. She's posting the content she likes, so I'll give it a like.
Love that for her. Yeah. So after school, what was your education like? I think I read you did a music qualification at A level.
Yeah, A-level? So I didn't do the whole A level thing.
Uh-huh.
Obviously bass is not very classical. So I thought A levels weren't going to really cater for me. Plus I knew at that point I wanted to do music. So I went to a college instead and did a BTEC level music performance and production qualification, level 3. It's really hard to remember yeah. this now.
No, I did the same. Mine was level 3 extended, but it was in performing arts because I wasn't in music at the time. So mine was, I think we did the same thing but just in different.
That was because it was the extended diploma. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did mine in the music performance and production. So it was, I think, similar. They were sort of ended up being the performing arts. Everything ended up being pretty similar in terms of everyone kind of knew each other. I'm glad we both did similar courses in that sort of sense as well.
Yeah, we did.
But yeah,
same
that was
qualification,
great.
Pretty much.
Yeah, handy. but yeah, it was really good. I think it kind of helped me go, do you know what? Yep, definitely, this is what I want to do. And it gave me all the time, basically, to get good. Because when I joined the course, I was all right. But I think you're then exposed to other talents. Because in school, you're normally the only person really that plays that sort of thing. Or there's like maybe one or two people. But, you know, you're so set on being the best and everything that you get there and it's all good. And you're comfortable. And then you go to something like college.
Yeah.
Everyone's a musician. And then you're like, oh, I'm not as good as I thought I was or whatever. So I think that kind of helped push me, having the little sort of, not competitive side, it wasn't competitive, but it was that sort of like, okay, I know what I need to do now to push myself to get to a higher level, and I know that I can do better, I'm getting too comfortable. So I think things like that, of going to a college where you're surrounded by other musicians or people that want the same job as you essentially, kind of helped push you, and it was really nice. My tutor was a bassist, so that also very much helped.
Oh, nice.
I probably should have used that, I think, more, but obviously college, it's full of everything happens in college, just life-wise, and obviously you're 17, 18, and you're kind of like, oh gosh, I've got to decide if I'm going to uni or not now. I've only got 2 years, great, and it goes really quick.
It's a very intense time, emotion-filled, intense, like pivotal, like you said, 17, 18, like those are the years you've got so many other things you're worrying about as well, like the social aspect of stuff, like the pressure of relationships or whatever. For me, actually, I loved those 2 years, but then those 2 years doing it in performing arts made me realise that acting wasn't the industry that I'd wanted to go in.
Got you, yeah.
Just because for me it was so much more competitive than I'd, like, I just Yeah, it just didn't feel right, and the whole auditioning for drama schools and stuff didn't feel like a right move for me, so I never did.
Yeah, it sounds stressful as well. The audition process sounds really stressful.
It was a lot, like auditioning, really. Me being a naturally anxious person anyway, and I got it in my head. I was like, I'm naturally this anxious. How the heck am I going to go all the way to London, have this stress of like getting through this audition? And I didn't even know at that point if the industry was going to be something that I'd thrive in because of my anxiety.
Totally,
so in my head, it was like, I don't think this is something I'm going to do moving forward. And then I went to uni and I did a degree in, initially it was English and drama, and then by the end it was just English because I dropped the drama. So.
Love that.
So after that, did you just go straight into
gigging? What was the timeline? Because it was, when did I leave? It was 2019.
Mm-hmm.
What did I do? I went into work at a music shop full time. So while I was in college, I worked at a music shop that I had my lessons at, my bass lessons guitar lessons and everything. I started working there part time, and then by the time I got to the end of college, I'd been working there, I think, 3.5-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I went full time after I left college to try and, I think, what did I try and do? I think I was just trying to see how I could become full-time musician and everything.
Yeah.
But obviously working a full-time job, I was then sort of, I was okay with waiting a bit to see what would happen. And then obviously COVID, lockdowns, everything. And probably quite similar to you, as awful as COVID was, the lockdowns truly did change my life for the better. And you know, it was you basically got given months of free time to figure out, okay, what am I actually doing? And I think eventually I got furloughed, so then I was like, okay, well, I've got time to do social media now. And actually,
you've got time and money coming in. That was a crazy time. I was working a part-time job as well.
Yeah.
And looking back to it, I'm like, whoa, I was getting paid to do nothing still. Like,
I know, it's
the
wild,
whole concept
isn't it?
Of furlough was great. Yeah, I was playing bass and getting paid to do nothing. Like,
literally.
Woo-hoo.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? And then I think you're just sort of so confused in that time of, you know, what do you do? Like, you've got all this free time. I've never had this free time before. I'm not used to it. Okay, so I'll start social media. And, you know, I think doing that made me push myself again more to still get better at bass and whatnot, and challenge myself in what I play online and everything. And I think it's a slow burner. But I think, yeah, after college, full-time, working a job, but just figuring it out, you know, because I didn't go to uni, and I'm glad I didn't, because otherwise I'd be stuck at a university during COVID. And I think from everyone else's experience, it sounded like a pretty horrible time.
Yeah, thankfully I lived at home, so it wasn't as bad for me, but it still was not good.
Still not ideal, but yeah, it's just, I don't think I would have enjoyed it at all. And I'm glad I didn't go to uni, I think, because otherwise I think everything would be very different for me right now. And also, it's just not for me. I'm a very sit at home, sit in my room, don't talk to me kind of person.
Relatable.
And just get on with my work. And I think uni, you know, if you're house sharing or if you're going to lectures or whatever you're doing, I think I was just at a point in my life where I realized, you know what, I'm okay with just working on my own now.
Like, I can tell you that from what you're saying was definitely the right decision not to go to uni, because I'm the same as you in that, like, I'm a little bit more introverted, like my own company, not here to talk, small talk's not my thing at all. Like, and uni just was not a great 3 years for me.
Yeah, of course.
Like, even without COVID as well, it just wasn't the environment for me. So that definitely, I think, not going to uni for you's obviously clearly worked out great. So
yeah, you know, I think, you know, I don't recommend to not go, but I think it's sort of your whole life you're taught go to uni and get a job, go to uni, get a job. You need to have a uni degree to get a job. And actually, you kind of don't.
No, you don't.
It obviously depends on the area. If you're not a musician, maybe don't listen to me. But, you know, I think I spent that time learning the rest of bass how I wanted to and doing what I needed to do to get myself out there and get work. So far, no one's asked me what, you know, if I got a degree, and no one's hired me for not having one. So it seems to be okay so far. I mean, I probably could have learned some more stuff while I was there, you know, made some more connections. But social media is so worldwide that I'm making connections regardless. And maybe, you know, maybe connections were a bit slower. But again, you know, it's just part of the process. And I think that was the price I was willing to pay in order to have the time to sit and learn bass more and take more time for it, especially over lockdowns of, you know, not having to worry about doing uni work. I literally had all hours of the day to just sit and practice. So it was definitely good in that sort of sense.
Yeah, that's amazing. Social media is so powerful as well. Like, and what you just said then of like people not asking you whether you've got a degree is a really important message, because a lot of people worry about that. I did at a time. And that really, they don't really care for that. It's more kind of who you are and how you play that kind of speaks for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So. If you've got stage presence, if you know your stuff and you can learn other people's stuff, that's all they care about, is just doing the job. They don't care about much else, as long as you're a nice, decent person to be around and you do your job properly and ace it.
Yeah.
Then it's all good, and you find the right people as well. I mean, maybe I've just not found the people that will ask me for my degree details. I don't know.
Maybe. But
maybe that's to come for me one day. I don't know. I hope not, because that'll be a really fun
conversation. Just show them your Instagram numbers. It's fine.
I'll be like, look at this.
Don't talk to me.
I'm famous. 50, don't talk to me.
Yeah. It was like 57,000 or something.
Oh, don't even. It's been stuck at that for so many months.
Has it?
I'm over it now. I'm so over
it. Is
it
really frustrating you?
You know what? It did at first. Mm-hmm. And I think it's taught me a very valuable lesson that numbers do not mean anything, because I'm still getting booked for work and I'm still packed out for gigs and I'm still creating content, even though the numbers aren't moving. So it's okay. I mean, obviously, if I had less followers, it probably would bother me more.
Yeah.
I'm very comfortable. I think when I hit maybe 30K, I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm cool with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously...
You can work from that, yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, if they grow, they grow. If they don't, they don't. 30K, 30K. And we become so immune. Like, 50,000 people is so many.
It is,
that is so many people. And... you know, it's so easy to go, oh, you know, I've been stuck at this for ages and it's not growing.
And then you're like, well, 50K, but it could be more. And then you'll see somebody else who's doing great and you're like, wow, the algorithm really likes them. Like, and like, I take it in an inspiring way. I'm like, okay, I need to work harder. But then it's like, girl, you've got 50,000 followers. That's like a really incredible achievement. And like you said, there's always going to be opportunities coming to you from that.
Yeah, you know, still, you never know, even if only 1,000 people see your video, it's still 1,000 people, and you never know who is in one of those 1,000. And that's exactly how I started getting work. I started getting work at, 8,000, you know. So
the
numbers really don't matter, I don't think, now. Especially when it's so easy to get a viral video, because you can't... I say easy, it's the wrong possible connotation to use, but, you know, like, sometimes such random videos get loads of views, and there's no answer to it. You kind of think, what am I doing wrong? Like, what can I do to get a viral video? But actually, I don't think there is an answer. I think it's purely whatever.
I completely agree.
You can spend all your hours of your time and all your brain capacity going, why me? Like, why is it not working? But like, you just never know when it is gonna happen. So you might as well just keep trying. If your video flops, it flops. Get over it, move on to the next one, and then fingers crossed the next one does. If it does, thumbs up. But then once that video does, you then become so absorbed with getting loads of views and the love of it, the getting the comments, the followers going up. And then once that stops, you then go back into that sadness again of, oh, what am I doing wrong? What's this? Da, 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 da. It's just this vicious cycle.
It is. It is a vicious cycle. It's quite toxic. I mean, it's incredibly toxic, and I'm not going to deny it. Like, it is. But social media's given us, like, amazing opportunities. But, like, I don't believe anyone that says that they aren't addicted to some at some level to having that interaction. Like you said, you first get your viral video, and you've experienced that now. Like, you're always going to remember that experience and always want to work to get that experience again. And it's just so much more of it is out of your control than you realise. Because I speak to so many people, they're like, my videos aren't doing well. It must be something wrong with my content. Like, I must be doing something wrong. And I'm like, I think you're putting too much faith in the algorithm. Like, sometimes it truly is out of your control.
Totally.
Like, adding three more hashtags isn't going to do anything. Or you, like, moving your text from up to down really isn't, like, going to make much difference. A lot of the times, it is an algorithm thing that you can't really necessarily always have the answer for.
No, you're spot on. And also, like, why should I adjust the songs I'm recording, the way I record edit, just so I can attempt to get a viral video? Like, I feel like that's, you're at that point, you're then posting for the wrong reasons. Like, I didn't start Instagram to go viral. I started it so I could get work. And I'm doing that.
And you have, yeah.
And I have. So, and, you know, could I get more work? Absolutely. I think everyone could want more work.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think getting that viral video might be the answer. I think it's just the persistence, mm-hmm. putting out the content. And if someone wants to find you and look at what you've got and take that as your portfolio, then they will. They won't look at the numbers. And if they do, they shouldn't. Because, again, it's not your fault
these
videos are doing bad. It's literally, it's mm-hmm. out of your control. What are you supposed to do? Like, boost it? I'm not paying.
Oh God, no. I'm not gonna lie, I did do that at the start.
I did
boost a few videos when I first started posting in lockdown. In my opinion, waste of money.
Yep, I did the exact same thing.
Don't waste your money, people.
I don't even know how much. I must have spent maybe £200 in total on just every now and then, like a £10 boost, a £10 boost.
Yeah.
And I think there was one I did on Facebook that did really well. Like randomly. I think I boosted it and then after the boost, it went, not, I hate the word viral because it wasn't viral, it just did well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, some, like, every now and then it might, great, it's done well.
Yeah.
But then you just, again, you get so fixated on, okay, well, now I need to pay for my videos to do well. No, you don't.
I hate the concept of that. I really, really, really hate the whole idea of that. I mean, if someone wanted to try it, definitely, I recommend it, try it. It might, like, give, like you said, with the Facebook, the boost that you needed to get some sort of traction. But, like, if you're someone that's doing it super frequently, I'd say just don't.
It's just a waste, honestly. It is
a lot of money.
Spend the time recording more videos.
Yeah.
And, again, just hoping for the best. Like, you know, I've got a bunch of videos just sat in my drafts and, you know, ready to go. But I no longer look at them and go, I think that one's going to do well. And, you know, that's a good song that people like. And I've stopped thinking about it. And I've just gone, you know, I fancy doing this song today. So I'm going to do that. And just, you know, if it does well, sick. Love that. Great. Whatever.
Win-win.
Win. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, why would I get sad? It's a great video regardless. I think it looks great. And I wouldn't post it if I didn't like a video I've done, you know. So as long as you're proud of it and happy with your videos you're posting and where you're at, then, you know, followers, schmollowers, you know, it's just fine.
Yeah.
And just
all for the healthy mindset.
Exactly. It's just, life's too short to be fixated on graphs, you know, and analytics and insights and whatnot, you know. It's too short.
Yeah. It is easier said than done, but you do get to a point where you realise, even having this conversation with you, I think sometimes you just need to talk through it, because then you realise how incredibly toxic actually the mindset is.
Totally.
So yeah, that was the, I mean, I'd already known it, but like talking to you about it is like the
It's nice solidifying. To know you're not alone and that
everyone exactly.
else is going through the same thing of
mm-hmm.
you know, and some people say, oh, have you been shadow banned? You know, here's a way to fix that. And I'm kind of like, look, I'm on my sixth shadow ban. I've tried everything. I really have. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't want to hear it. I'm just accepting it that it's happened. I mean, I think there was one point my Instagram was doing really well. And I posted About Damn Time, Lizzo. Posted that cover.
Mm-hmm.
And it got 2,000 views.
Crazy.
But no one was seeing it. The likes, I think it had 200 likes or something, you know, and when you're normally averaging about 2,000,
mm-hmm.
but that to be so little, you think, what have I, and it was a good video. Like, I'm actually genuinely proud of that
really
cover.
Really proud of it,
I really enjoyed it. It was so fun. And it's a great song. And like, I was recording it and I was thinking, this is going to do really well because it actually sounds really good. And then to post it and it did so bad. And there's no logical explanation as to why that video is just, and people will message me like, I've not seen your new video, where's your new video? I'm like, oh, Instagram's literally not showing my video to my followers. If that's not the definition of a shadow ban, I don't know what is, but I don't see a way of fixing that. Get on the phone and call up Instagram headquarters like, hey, what are you doing to my new video? Like, they don't care.
As if they're going to do anything about that. Exactly, or even want to answer a call from you.
Yeah, I'm like, doing bad.
Get over yourself, lady.
Yeah, literally. So I was kind of like, do you know what? Actually, I don't care. It's a good video. If no one's seen it, whatever. Like, I'll get over it. Mm-hmm. Still kind of bitter about it, but, you know.
It is a bit of a hit to the ego sometimes when a video doesn't do well that you're proud of.
Yeah, because you kind of think, oh, was it actually not good then?
You doubt yourself so much.
Yeah, I'm like, am I actually just not good?
I can't tell you the amount of times I've asked myself that.
Yeah.
But it's silly because there's so many other videos where people, you know, clearly done well, but then one does bad and you're like completely questioning your whole like skill set. And
yeah, you're like, oh, is this the right job for me?
Yeah.
Am I in the wrong industry?
You definitely do get those moments. Yeah. It's silly. It's so stupid when you think about it, but it's so true. On the topic of Instagram and stuff like that, I wanted to ask you what your experience with hate comments has been. And being a woman online, do you also get people commenting on your appearance all the time?
A bit of both. Mm-hmm. quite a bit of both. I mean, I'm pretty lucky. I don't get a lot of hate comments, really.
Yeah.
The only time you get a lot of them is when a video does do really well and it sometimes gets on the ugly side of Instagram or YouTube or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's maybe like 2 hate comments per video at most, really, which I think is a pretty decent amount. It's good enough to give you a little bit of a giggle. So
some of them are funny.
They're always quite funny. Yeah. They're quite funny. But yeah, I think it's always silly stuff. I mean, yeah, it's not ideal to get hate comments. I don't think anyone deserves to get hate for doing something so harmless.
Yeah.
Like,
just
realistically,
living life.
Yeah, like, realistically, is my video that upsetting to you that you needed to take 5 minutes out of your day to write a little comment? But also, yeah, the whole appearance comments, they just kind of annoy me because I really, even if I did dress provocatively, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I still get told to cover up and stuff, or like that I'm just dressing like it for the views, or, you know, you're only getting likes because you're a girl.
Yeah, that's a very frequent one.
It's just so tiring. I'm so bored of it. It's so old. It's so overused. It's just the go-to. And, you know, like, we talked about, we don't know what makes the algorithm go great. I've had videos go viral where I'm wearing a long-sleeve shirt and trackies, you know. So it's clearly not based of what you wear. But it's annoying that no one comments on that about what my appearances, or they say, like, I'm too dressed, and they're like, oh, you know, you cover up a lot, don't you? And I'm kind of like, you know, you told me to, so
you cover
make
up a lot.
Your mind.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like you can't, like, if you smile, you look too happy.
Don't even. I get comments all the time about,
if you stop smiling, it's so annoying. And if you stop smiling, you don't look like you're having a good time. You know, you don't look like you're into it. So then you start to move.
That's my most popular thing. They're like, you don't look like you're having fun. Like, I think you should smile more. Like, why do you look bored? I'm like, oh my God. I get those comments all the time, but that frustrates me. I'm like, don't even. Can't even.
I'm just expressing myself. Like, why do I have to? Like, how I play in my videos is literally how I play live. And people are like, you're just smiling for the camera. And I'm like, I'm really not. Like, I'm really, and I've got live footage of me not doing that, you know? It's so annoying. Like, why would I, and even if I was smiling for the camera, why am I not allowed to smile?
Yeah, why is that a problem?
That is so outrageous. Like, you cannot do anything without being picked apart. You go through a woman's comment section, it's like, why are you looking at the camera? Why are you smiling? Why are you dressed that way? Why are you playing that way? Why are you playing that song? Why are you doing this? Leave me alone.
Like,
I get people that are like, how do you afford all those bases?
Oh, I've seen that one on yours actually.
And I'm kind of like, by buying them? I don't know. Like, I don't know what people expect me to say, but I never see guys get those comments. I never see people
That's
tell
so
guys
true,
to put a
actually.
Shirt on.
No,
I don't. You know, go tell a guy to put a shirt on. You know, or tell him to undress. I don't know. I don't care really. But you just don't see it. But when it, like when a woman does it, they get so triggered.
Yeah.
Smiling. People complaining about smiling.
I know. You can't win. Honestly, you really can't win. You can't at all. Like, if I'm smiling too much, then it's a lot. And they're like, why are you doing that? If I'm not smiling, it's so frustrating because the videos they're telling me that I don't look like I'm having fun are videos where 3 seconds later I was smiling. Like, and I'm like,
what do you want me to do? Like,
it's not
psycho
like
smile?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I don't understand your point. And my face is just my face. When I'm playing bass, my face could be doing absolutely nothing and I could be playing, but like inside I'm loving it. Like,
yeah.
It just happens when I concentrate sometimes. You can't see the emotion on my face. I can't
absolutely
predict what I'm going to do. And it's like, oh, she doesn't look like she's enjoying it. She needs to more energy. Like, this would be good if she, like, oh, I don't know. Go away,
it's stupid,
man.
Isn't it? Or like, why are you looking at the camera? And you know, I never used to look at the camera, right? I used to be shy of looking at the camera, especially my older YouTube videos and everything. It was just, I was just looking at the guitar, and you'd get comments of like, you know, look like you're enjoying yourself. Why don't you try and interact? Because the thing is, yes, you're smiling at the camera, but to you, like someone that's watching the video, you want it to feel personal, like. You know, if it's someone that's looking at my videos because they want to hire me, they want to see what I look like, what my face looks like. You know, they want to see that I can interact with people and smile for a camera. You know, when you're filming music videos and everything, Instagram rules go out the window. You have to smile at the camera, unless they tell you not to.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, you know, it's just such a stupid, stupid thing to say. And why are you looking at the camera? Because I want to. Like, where else am I supposed to look? Because if I just look at the neck, then you just, or they'll get comments of, oh, she needs to look at the neck all the time because she doesn't know how to play. And
she needs to learn to not rely on looking at the neck. And it's like, oh my God, you actually can't win. And I think
it's infuriating.
Yeah, it shouldn't, because we know we can't win, it shouldn't infuriate us as much, but it does. Like,
it does. And do you know what? It's not my comments that infuriate me. It's other people's comments.
Yeah.
And
no, I agree.
I mean, like, even the other day, it's not even related to being a girl, but I posted, I didn't post, I saw a video post from a couple guys, I think, jamming some Nirvana in their bedroom, or a room of a house, a room. Just jamming, right? Just having fun, it's Nirvana, you know, Nirvana that are, like, crazy out there, grunge, they don't care, so, you know, if you're going to cover Nirvana, you might as well do a good job of it. And I think they did an absolutely delightful job. But all the comments are like, why are they going so extra? Why are they dancing like that? Why did they set up the camera? It's so cringe. Like, someone was like, it's the fact that they set the camera up and pressed record makes it cringe.
People love to say that.
Yeah, apparently recording yourself is now cringy.
Yeah.
And also the whole, you know, Instagram guitarist thing. I hate that term. Like, I, you know, just because you post on Instagram
doesn't make you less of a musician.
No, like, how, it's just how you get out there nowadays. It's like, you know, I'm just following what the times are, and I'm not gonna, I could easily sit and complain about how awful it is to post on social media. We shouldn't have to post on social media to do well in our jobs, but it's just reality.
Yeah,
how you get out there now.
Mm-hmm.
So I could sit and complain about it, but no, we just get on with it. But then to be just called an Instagram guitarist, I'm kind of like, great. Now I'm, you just can't win.
Yeah, you're
everything
put into
you
a
do,
box.
You just get criticised.
Yeah.
I'm just thankful it's not my comment sections that have that. But when I see other girls that have those comments in there, it does frustrate me because I, you know, they ignore them clearly. But I don't know, it feels so, like you're against the whole world. Like, there's so many people that just hate you.
Yeah.
Because what?
Yeah, because I don't...
Just existing.
Yeah, hey, not to say that I... See, it's really difficult having this conversation because I know a lot of people get offended when we talk about being women online. And it's not to say that men don't get hate comments either.
Absolutely.
But you do have to acknowledge that, like, the type of comments we get are completely different. like constantly totally. Sexualized, like even
constant sexist comments.
Yeah, yeah.
So bad. The misogyny and, you know, like you're totally right. They are a different type of comment. They're not just a hate comment.
Mm.
They're a sexist comment. It's a mm-hmm. misogynistic comment. It's attacking us personally, not about what necessarily we're playing or whatever. They actually yeah. attack us because mm-hmm. we're a girl. They're not getting attacked because they're a guy. They're getting attacked because they've got critique on their technique or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't see it as often.
No, you don't. And we should, I don't know why I feel weird about talking about specifically being a woman on social media, but like I should feel okay with like saying actually it is an issue, like not taking away from the hate comments that guys get, and not saying that they don't ever get them. But yeah. like the constant sexualization, like you really can't win. Like in mine, even now I feel uncomfortable if I'm posting a video that's not about my appearance, but they're commenting on it, telling me how beautiful I am. Like I understand.
Yeah, it's just a bit awkward, isn't it?
It's really awkward. And I don't like interacting with those comments because like that's not what I'm posting it for. So that makes me feel uncomfortable. And then I'm like, well, they're just being nice. But I'm also like, well, no.
You don't owe them anything.
No. I kind of don't, I feel really, really disgusting when people are just commenting on my appearance and just don't like totally. It at all.
Yeah, you just feel like dehumanised. Like
yeah,
like
I do. Object. Yeah, you really do. I mean, it's not nice.
Like, you know, I think we're both very pretty girls.
I love that.
We're very blessed. But like, uh-huh. you know, I think people say it's because you're attractive, so you should expect it. And I'm kind of like, well, I disagree, because I would rather them just post a heart emoji than have to say you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen mm-hmm. in the world. And I just leave those comments alike. I never really respond to them.
I don't like them either. I just leave them there.
Yeah. You do better than me. I just feel bad. Because I always appreciate that people leave a comment. Sometimes people go really extra. But yeah, it's nice to have a compliment every now and then, but some of them are just clearly watching us because we're a woman, not because we're a musician,
mm-hmm.
and sort of almost fetishizing. I can't say that word.
Oh my god! I get what you're saying. I couldn't say. I'm not even gonna try.
I'm not even gonna try it again. I can hear it in my head, but it's not gonna come out.
So relatable. So, happens all the time.
Can it hear on the screen?
I will do.
I feel like people do that. Uh-huh. To our videos, they're not actually watching it because we're a musician, they're watching it because it's something that they enjoy a bit too much,
and it's disgusting. It's very disgusting.
And you know, seeing the amount of saves you've got on a video scares me sometimes, because I'm kind of like, oh, that's a lot of saves. Why are you, I mean, I appreciate it, it helps the algorithm, but why are you saving my video?
It is a lot. Well, I understand, and I know some men are on the side of like, you're a woman and they're only watching you because you're pretty. And I'm like, well, yeah, that might be the case, and I understand that bothers you, but like, how do you think we feel being like objectified all the time?
I don't want it to be that way either.
Exactly.
And then, you know, when it comes to summer and wearing tops like this, I mean, it's very hot in my room, which is why I decided to wear this, but you know, I should be able to show this and not be told I'm underdressed.
Yeah.
Like, underdressed, someone says put some clothes on, and I'm kind of there like,
what? I was in a tank top once because it was really hot, and I'm like, what, you're just seeing my shoulders and my arms, like what the hell?
Yeah, I didn't know this was so offensive. Like, yeah, it's a body, you know, it's, we all have one, you know, it's not new.
Yeah.
And it's just very, yeah, when they make it our problem and they go, you know, oh, women post it, you know, they have it so easy on social media.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't last a day. They really wouldn't.
No.
And I stand by that wholeheartedly, because as soon as they realised what our DMs look like, what our comment section looks like, our emails, I don't know about you, but I get very harassing emails.
Do you?
Yeah, very explicit. I had literally one yesterday that was, someone was like, would you be okay with sending me some erotic photos and everything? You know,
I've been asked for pictures before, and he kept doing it, emailing, because obviously I wasn't replying to them. And then he would, the first one he put a certain price, and the next one he upped the price because I didn't respond. Then another email he sent, then it upped the price again because I didn't respond. I'm like,
it's just weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's just one of those things we have to deal with, unfortunately, and we're probably way more thick-skinned than they could ever be because of it.
Because sadly, we've had to get used to it. Yeah, they don't see it because they don't experience it. And it's sad how like used to it we are. Because when I first got that email of him asking me for explicit pictures or whatever, I laughed at it. I genuinely laughed at it. And it's really weird because I should be really offended and feel really violated by that. But the fact that I laugh at it is a bit of a problem.
I think. Exactly. We shouldn't be so okay to deal with it. We shouldn't be so complicit to it, you know. It's a shame that that's kind of part of what comes with social media. But it just is. And I can't see it changing anytime soon. You know, I think it just is how it is. And I think some guys are really quite stuck in that mindset of, you know, girls posting on social media, they have it so easy because they only see the viral ones, realistically. They don't see, you know, people that are posting dressed normally. I hate saying that, but like just in quotation marks, how they perceive as dressed normally. They don't see it because it's just sometimes not shared.
Yeah.
But then, like, if your video is shared where you are dressed normally and you're not looking at the camera or smiling or whatever, then they're complaining about everything else. So you just cannot win.
Yeah, they'll still find something to pick on to say.
Exactly, always. And so it's just really tiring, but keep on keeping on and stay mad because I ain't going anywhere.
I love that. I'm just going to crop you saying that and just, like, keep repeating it.
I'm out here getting hired, so... You know.
Exactly. They're just jealous, aren't they? That's really what
Absolutely.
It is.
It's always the private accounts with like 6 followers and no profile picture as well. And I'm kind of like,
yeah,
you can't even post a picture of yourself online. You know? And you're coming at me for how I look?
Uh-huh. I can't remember what the hate comment was. I really wish I knew what he said. But this one guy commented something not nice on one of my videos. It was a private account. He had a profile picture, so I could kind of see what he looked like. But then I went to go to reply to it, and this guy is out here commenting horrible things on other people's accounts, but not allowing you to mention him. And I'm like, what a coward. That's such a cowardly thing to do. But there's a little bit, in the Instagram comments, there's a workaround, so I don't have to tag him in the comment, but it will still go to him if I hit reply.
Yeah, so I've done that before as well.
Yeah, I took his name out of it, and I was like... Because on his picture, he looked like a really smiley, happy person. And my reply literally was, I was like, it's a shame you're so rude because you actually look like a really nice, like, nice, happy and smiley person. And I worked around.
I know.
And the first bit is a little bit like, oh, but I don't care. But, like, I just think it's such a cowardly move. Like, if you're going to comment things on that, why take... First of all, I didn't even know that was a setting. But, like...
Oh. Yeah, it's... Yeah, I know, right? It's like, why have... I mean, they've probably got it on for a reason if they go around commenting hate comments so people can't respond to them.
It's a hobby for him.
It's very cowardly, it is. And it says a lot about them as a person, them having to turn that on. You know?
Yeah.
If you're a public figure, get it. You probably get a lot of people tagging you every day. But if, you know, if you're just someone with a private account and everything just leaving hate comments and you have that on, it's just rather... It's rather sad, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm annoyed that I can't remember what he said. Anyway,
there's so many of them.
Exactly. It's, like, you know, it's just like,
give a list of like every single one you've ever received and you'll still forget some. You know, there's always something, isn't there?
Exactly. Yeah. Being self-employed, do you find it hard to like balance your time to like make time for family, friends, yourself, even? Because I'm assuming you have a lot going on.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's a lot of guilt in self-employment of always feeling like you're not doing enough.
Because so relatable. Sorry, carry on.
It's one of those things where I think everyone goes through it, but no one really talks about that side, especially as a musician. You know, you're in charge of, unless you've got a manager or something. I don't. I'm a one-man team, you know. You know, I'm in charge of everything, and all hours of the day, my head is just spinning in circles of like, do this, do this, do this, do this, and it's constant. And when you work on one thing, you then think, oh, I also need to do this, so should I stop doing this now and then continue doing this bit? And it's so hard to manage your time. And with the same thing of like hanging out with friends, doing things yourself, in that sense, like, I really should go out more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very content, you know, like I said, I'm very more than happy to sit in my room and just be on my own and yeah. get on with life. And that's just always how I've been. And I think a lot of people could probably relate to this, but it's a lot easier to get stuck into work and just say, do you know what? No, I'm not going out. I've got a lot of things to do, and I'm not going to go and do this and that because I've got this to do. And it's just so easy to just sit at the computer all day.
Mm-hmm.
You do need to get out. I've started going to the gym recently to kind of have something else to work on that's not music related.
Yeah,
everything has become recently everything music, and I think I don't think I'm going to burn out because I'm enjoying every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to, realistically, burn out or not, you've got a gig to do, you've got to do it. So
yeah, you've got to get done.
I haven't got time to be burnt out. Yeah, it's hard, I think, to be self-employed. You've not got anyone telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. So if you forget to do something or something's not done to a higher standard, it's all on you. You've got no one else to blame but yourself. So it's very easy to hold yourself accountable, which I guess is probably a good thing in terms of that. I think maybe mm-hmm. in other work situations, it's easy to go, oh, it's this person's fault or this person's fault.
Yeah.
Nope.
You can't do that.
It's all on you. It's all on you. Like, you know, you've got to do it your best. And if it's not you, it's no one, you know. So I think when it comes to managing everything, it's really hard, especially like with, you know, running things like Patreon, having multiple social media mm-hmm. platforms, gigging, learning the songs for gigging, going out and actually getting stuff done for my instruments, restrings, setups, everything. Like, there's just a long list of a to-do list.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot, you know, and it's really easy to be forgetful and forget little things here and there, and just fingers crossed that people forgive you.
Yeah.
It happens, you know, it's going to happen. And you just got to be able to keep up with a lot. But yeah, it's an interesting transition, I think, going from a full-time job to mm-hmm. then all of a sudden being self-employed and in a job that is so unpredictable as well. Yeah. You know, you never know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. No, literally everything you're saying is so relatable. Like, for me, I could be constantly making a to-do list and there'll be always something to add on to it, and then always something that I've forgotten. And because there's so many things going on, like you said, like Patreon and other things, and I've got the podcast that's a project and creating content, and then something else that you have on your career bucket list that you want to get started on, that, like, it constantly feels like you're stop and starting things, and like learning how to properly manage things and what to put first, and it is a lot. It's quite overwhelming.
Yeah, it's kind of like juggling without knowing how to juggle. It's like everything is kind of just crashing around you, and you're just sitting there going,
you just pick up one ball from time to time, give it a few tosses, and then, like, oh, that's dropped now, pick up that one. It's like,
it's exactly like that. I don't think I've actually got a finished project. Like, everything is just in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can get really hard because it's so easy to keep things in your brain, and then until you write them down, you go, oh my god, I forgot that actually existed, I need to get on that. And yeah, it's just really hard to prioritize. Like, how do you put one thing over the other, especially when it comes to, you know, earning? You know, like, there's morals and then there's earnings, and mm-hmm. you know, do you put a moral gig over an earning gig, or do you put this over that? You know, this video, do you do a video for this brand or this brand? You know, one of them's going to be upset. Which one do you upset? You know, which one do you let down? Or, you know, there's so many examples of that happening, and you just kind of have to deal with it when it comes to it. There's no right or wrong. It's just all situational, and no one teaches you this stuff.
No, you're all on your own. And as much as we're saying how hard it is also great because of how much time we technically have on our hands.
Absolutely, we choose what we do with our time and how, you know, we get to play our instrument for a living, so
yeah, exactly.
It could be a lot worse.
It definitely could, but not to take away.
Hard.
Yeah,
totally. And I think it's hard when, especially sometimes, you're doing stuff that isn't you playing. Like, I do a lot of days where I end up actually not playing at all because I'm doing so much admin work.
Mm-hmm.
And the day flies by, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, I've not played today. Like, I'm a bassist and I'm still doing my job, but I'm not playing bass.
I know. How does that work? Yeah, yeah. Bass is your job, but you actually haven't done anything. Well, I guess it's stuff related to it, but you've not picked it up today. It's crazy. Yeah, it's really weird when you think about it like that.
a job like this can be so huge and have so many avenues on it, especially when it comes to content creation. And you probably find it with the podcast of, like, you know, we're sitting talking about music, but we're not actually playing.
Yeah,
it's for our job and everything. It's just really strange.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, your job extends past the base when it comes to content creation, which is really cool, because there's loads of different avenues. But you're still a musician and still a bassist, and you still get to, you know, do stuff like that. So is there anything that you do to keep yourself motivated? Because I know motivation is such a hard thing to maintain. What do you do in moments where you're not feeling it?
I normally try and do something that's not high effort.
Mm-hmm.
So normally I find if I've got a day where I'm really not feeling doing anything,
yeah,
I'll probably do something like reply to some messages, reply to some comments, catch up on that side of stuff. Also, I find posting in general I'm quite behind on my other social medias. Instagram's the main one, but when it comes to TikTok and Facebook and everything, I've still got older videos that I'm posting. So I normally find that, you know, after I've gone through replying to some comments, posting some older videos, I'm kind of like, oh, I should maybe record some more, because I'm quite enjoying seeing the outcomes of my hard work. So I think it's good to sometimes take a step back and put some perspective over everything you're working towards. It's, you know, it's totally normal to feel unmotivated and everything, you know, and have times where you're like, I'm really tired and I'm not in the mood. And I think doing things like posting, replying to comments kind of brings you back. And you're like, do you know what? Okay, I can see the outcomes of my hard work and I want to do this now. Like, I'm feeling better and, you know. But, you know, if it doesn't work, don't force it, you know.
Yeah.
You can't force a smile in a video.
Yeah.
Unlike some people clearly think we can.
Yeah. I'd look insane if I tried to do that.
I know, yeah. Eyes just popping out of my head.
Oh, God. That's hilarious.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's normal to take some time out.
It is normal.
Regain yourself.
But does it mean I feel guilt a lot of the time, which is silly because time out's time out. But I like what you said is reminding yourself why you do it, like reading comments and going back to old videos is like a kind of nice reminder of, you know, why you do what you do, but also being okay with taking time out and not feeling guilty for it. That's still something that I'm...
Totally. I mean, realistically, like, you can't force yourself to record something. Especially, like, I don't know about you, but sometimes I have days where my hands just aren't working. Like, I play and it's just nothing's... I cannot get a good take. I'm getting hot and bothered and I'm frustrated and I'm angry and I'm thinking, I can't post this. I mean, I can't even get a bloopers clip out of it because I'm that angry, you know? So it's like, why am I trying to force myself into the situation? And probably just having that break and that ability to take some time out and do something not music related and kind of let your brain rest. Because it's very intense recording. I don't know about you, but my heart rate's
really
up.
Intense.
My hands are sweating. I'm stressed. And like, because sometimes getting that take takes longer than five takes.
It does. And it's not because you're not able to do it. There's so many other factors, like thinking about lighting and stuff. Like, your brain is so preoccupied. Like, at a normal gig, you're not thinking about stuff like that. Like, you're just playing. But when you're sat down recording yourself, you're thinking about lighting. You're thinking about, oh, did I remember to press record or did I not? Like, did I accidentally mute the track? Am I looking weird? Yep. Did I smile? You know, like, things like, did I smile weird?
I know, exactly. Did I look at the camera weird?
You've got to think about the aesthetics as well as obviously remembering what you're playing and executing it well, that, like, people forget that a lot of times why you find recording so hard and why it takes so many takes is not because you're a bad musician, it's just because there's so much that you have to think about.
It could be literally as simple as, like, the lighting and the sky changes outside. It starts raining, and the sound of the rain just puts you off.
You catch something in the corner of your eye and you're like, oh.
Yeah. And it completely distracts you, and then you're out of it. You're like, you know what, this isn't working today. I can't do this.
Yeah.
And that's normal. It happens to everyone. Like, I've stopped recording because I've got a bit of my hair in my face and I'm like, you know what, it's annoying me, I can't deal with it.
Yeah, not going to carry on. Yep, stop.
Or, like, give it half an hour and I'll come back and do it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally normal. And you just got to be able to take a step back and go, do you know what? Like, hold myself down and chill for a second. Think about what's going on and distract myself and try and just get back on it. And, you know, if you're not motivated, don't force it. Because I just hate it.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's so cool talking to you because literally everything you're saying I like 100% completely relate to. So it's
love
like,
that.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm glad I'm not alone.
No, you're definitely not alone. Like, it's crazy how much I relate to what you're saying. So have you ever experienced imposter syndrome, or have you ever struggled with that where you feel like, I mean, I'm pretty sure you know what imposter syndrome is, but.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. All the time.
So hard literally, to deal with.
It's impossible to deal with because I've been stood on stage before thinking, what am I doing?
Mm.
Like, what? Like, I've got a bass in my hands and there's people there and the audience that are paid to be here and they're watching me. I've been hired by someone and, like, you start thinking, do I deserve this? Have I worked hard for this? Am I meant to be here? Like, am I doing a good job right now? Everything starts flowing through your head at 100 miles an hour. And you just can't stop it. You just kind of have to deal with it and accept that you're feeling this way. And it's so hard to sometimes take work when you think, oh, I'm definitely not capable. They'll probably find someone else. And especially if you get hired once and you don't get hired again, that also then kind of really negatively affects your confidence because you think, oh, I definitely wasn't good enough. So, you know, now I have to work hard and, you know, I'm not good enough to be in this industry. You know, this person can do that and I can't, so therefore I'm not worthy. And it's a very strange feeling to have, and feeling like it's like an out-of-body experience. You no longer feel like you are a musician. You just think, I'm not good. Yeah. I'm not good. Get me out of here.
You constantly get you out of here.
I'm a musician. Get me out of here.
Maybe that's another content idea. We'd have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. But you do have to constantly ground yourself, because like describing it as an out of body experience does make a lot of sense, because you get into a certain headspace that's like so false, because you're that it's not true. Like you said, like not getting invited to do a gig again, or like them not wanting you back, like you're thinking about all these things in your head that very much most likely aren't true, and then you're questioning your playing ability, you're questioning like whether you're good enough musician just in general, and it's so falsified, and it is, like you say, an out-of-body experience until you have to then ground yourself again and then realise, no, actually I am capable, and, you know, everyone else thinks these things about themselves, everyone else goes through imposter syndrome moments way more frequently than you realise.
Yeah, totally. It's so weird because, I mean, sometimes to bring myself back, I kind of fake it till I make it. I'm kind of like, I am Daisy Pepper. I am going to go on that stage and I'm going to give it all I've got. If I mess up, so be it. Whatever. Deal with it. It's cool. Like, sometimes you have to psych yourself out and just really snap yourself back into place, because you, like, no one's got time to think all these things. It's such a negative way to think about yourself, and also undermine all the hard work you put in, like the hours and hours you spend practicing your instrument and playing it. Like, even when you're recording, every bad take we get is still practice, it's still playing.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't got the calluses on my fingers because I'm not good at my instrument. Like, you know, you've just got to switch that mindset around and go, do you know what? If I'm not good enough for someone, then that's on them and not me. Like, I'll be good enough for someone. And it's just a strange thing to think about with certain, it's with certain people as well. It's not necessarily all the people you gig with and do sessions with, because some of them make you feel so comfortable that you feel like you're on top of the world. But then obviously some other things are, you know, more serious, and all of a sudden all the compliments kind of go out the window and you just turn up, you do your job and you go home. And you kind of think, I was given no feedback. Does that mean I did a bad job? Oh, yeah. No, now I'm
not getting the validation that you're normally used to. It's so hard.
Yeah, especially with comment sections. Getting the first experience of getting positive comments was so weird because it was kind of like an addiction of I felt like I needed to have those comments to feel good in myself. I don't really as such now because I've gotten to the point where, you know, I don't care about the numbers anymore. But, you know, I think at first it was so validating to have those positive comments, those positive experiences, that when they didn't happen, it was then the imposter syndrome kicks in and you think, oh gosh, this is all me, I need to do better. And
yeah, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Yeah, totally. And it's really scary to think because, I mean, I don't know, there's probably people out there that have quit their job as a musician because of imposter syndrome, 100%, which is really a shame.
Yeah, I don't, I definitely think that most likely could be a lot of people's reasons for not continuing their music journey. But what you said about fake it till you make it, I genuinely believe is like the, if not the only, the most important remedy for imposter syndrome is fake it till you make it. Because really that's all that you can do.
You've got to have that self-confidence because if you don't, then no one else will.
Yeah.
When you turn up to a gig and you're happy and bubbly and you're happy to be there, people really do see that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're watching this and you think, oh my gosh, I'm at a gig and I can't tell, like, you know, I can't be out there with myself. Honestly, you've just got to be yourself and be the happy, smiley person you are because people really do appreciate it. And they see it and they feel that, they radiate that energy and they absorb it and they love it. And I think you can't let something like imposter syndrome overtake that and let you be insecure at your gigs and take over that mindset. You've just got to let your personality shine and not let it get you down and go, do you know what? I'm great. Like if I believe I'm great, then other people believe I'm great.
Yeah.
And I can convince myself I'm great. So why can't I convince other people that I'm great? Because, you know, you're your own worst enemy. If you can convince yourself, you can do anything.
So, yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So true.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, 100%. And you got yourself there in the first place for a reason. Like, you know, you wouldn't have been invited to do that gig or whatever it is.
Totally.
If you weren't equipped to be there. Is there anything that you're working on right now or are super, super excited about? I did see you just had merch come out today, didn't you?
I did, literally today. Well, posting the unboxing of it. Yeah, I've got like a little collaboration for merch with a brand called Cherry Dog Apparel.
Nice.
We've been working on it. I can't even remember how long we've been working on it now for, but it's been in the works for a while, just the design. And you know, I had merch before and it was very basic and it still is. I've still got it up, you know, just my logo. But I wanted something that was a bit more graphic, a bit more out there that I could wear to a gig and it not necessarily look like my merch. It just looks like actual.
It's a little bit more
clothing.
Subtle. Yeah.
Yeah. But it just looks really cool. And I went with the only Pepper that can play the bass, which I know is technically not true because I did have a people that, what about Flea?
You definitely get that, yeah.
And I'm like, I know who Flea is and I did think about it, you know, but I think, you know, there's probably thousands of people with my last name out there, but it just sounded so catchy and it looks cool. And also people can buy it if their last name is Pepper and they can play the bass, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's quite niche, but that'd be really cool if someone brought it for those reasons.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love that. If they want to, but if not, then they can rock a good looking shirt anyway.
Yeah.
It's got that fiery aspect to it, and I feel like I quite imagine myself as this just like fiery thing.
Fiery thing.
Fiery thing, ball of existence, I don't know.
Love it.
And it's comfortable. I love purple and everything, so I've wanted a purple shirt. Purple and orange I think go quite nicely together. So that was quite exciting to work on and have come to fruition. And yeah, it's just been an insane process having all these things kind of happening at the minute. And that one was, I think, I don't know how it's doing so far because it's only just been released, so
yeah.
It's all happening today.
Today, woohoo. Well, today's, what is it? It's not March.
It's not March anymore. April.
Is it April the 6th, 5th, what is it?
Yeah, 6th. Yeah, 6th.
Yeah.
It's there the day of everything happening.
Inside info for you podcast listeners and watchers, that's the day that this has been recorded. I do not know what day it's going to be uploaded. But
we'll never know.
There we go.
Now they know when it was recorded.
Yeah, and now they know that they can go and purchase their Daisy Pepper merch. So to end it, what I normally ask all my, I mean, I haven't done too many podcast episodes, but like the ending question I normally ask, I try and tie it to the title of the podcast. So, Daisy. I don't know why I've automatically made it so formal.
Dramatic.
Yeah. If you had to choose a song that was like essentially your soundtrack to success, what song would that be? It could be success you've already experienced or success that you imagine yourself experiencing in future. Is there a song that comes to mind when you think about that?
Yes. And nice. People that follow me probably already know, to be honest. It is Hysteria by Muse.
Oh, nice.
I've loved Muse growing up my whole life. They were very inspirational to me. I've listened to them before I played bass. And when I was learning bass, their bass lines were, they were absolutely necessary in getting me to where I am today, in terms of teaching me how necessary a bass line is in a song, how dramatic they can be and how crazy they can be, how complicated and different tones, you know, fuzz and octaves and everything, you know, different techniques, different styles of playing. There's just so much in their music and it's so artistic. So it's always been a very important inspiration for me and my playing. But that song, I learnt that pretty early on in my playing, obviously not very well, but it kind of accidentally became my soundtrack. my soundtrack to success.
Oh, I love it.
That's so fun to say.
It's fun to hear. I've never heard anyone say it before, so that's cool.
That's awesome. I can't go over that. That was so satisfying to say. That's getting clipped.
There's so many clips I need to make of this podcast, honestly.
When I was a year into my playing, I broke my pinky here. And it was taped to this finger like this, and obviously this is my playing hand. So you can imagine playing bass like this for, it was quite a while because it was a pretty nasty break. It was awful, very painful. But yeah, I was sort of strapped here, and obviously I wanted it to heal properly, so I was being very cautious of not overstretching it. And I had a gig not long after I broke it, one of my first gigs. I was 15 at the time, or maybe just under 15. I can't remember if I played a lot, but basically I joined all of the music teachers at the music school on stage to play Hysteria on bass with a strapped up finger.
What?
So yeah, I think the videos, I haven't posted it online publicly yet. It's on my Patreon, but I'm tempted to post it one day because it's pretty,
that's so pretty cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
It's very, like, I'm very young in it, very very young. But yeah, it was kind of from that moment it became like I was able to play it on stage, and I was given a very, again, dramatic, we were talking about dramatic intros. I was like, this is Daisy, she's going to play Hysteria with a broken finger. And I was like, oh gosh, the pressure's on. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I did ace it.
Like,
I did a very
it.
Good job, considering, you know, lacking two fingers.
Two fingers, yeah.
I think I did play on this finger, but obviously, as you can imagine, it's just a bit, like,
range of motion probably wasn't the easiest, yeah.
Yeah, especially with octaves, it was. I'm a very, like, I believe in the pinky.
Oh, I agree.
The pinky finger. I love it. So I'd been, after that, I realised, oh, a pinky's actually quite important. I didn't realise how important it was until I didn't have it.
Yeah.
So after that gig, I was like, I need to work on my pinky finger. So yeah, that gig happened, and it kind of, it was a really massive pivotal moment in my bass playing. And that song was my audition for college.
Damn.
And that's what got me into college. And then that song was my first ever viral video on YouTube. It's got over a million views.
That's crazy.
And it's the thing that changed my career for the better. That's the moment I realised I need to quit my full-time job.
That's insane.
And yeah, so that song is my soundtrack to success.
Yeah, I don't think, I love that. I'm not going to get over you saying that. No, I don't think you could have had a better answer for that. That's crazy. There's so much history with that song for you.
Yeah, it's like a superhero origin story, feels like, almost.
Literally. Like
the birth of Captain America.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous I don't have one like that.
It's never too late.
Let me just break my pinky finger real quick.
that's it. Break a finger or break a limb. And yeah. Then you've got something to work towards.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's been so nice speaking to you, Daisy. I know. Yeah, thank you for having me. No,
thank
honestly.
You for having me. I appreciate it.
When you said that you'd be interested, I was like, yes. Because I like put off asking you for so long, because obviously it's scary. Oh, no. It's scary having someone say, nah, sorry, not my thing.
I know. I can imagine I wouldn't be able to do that. I'd just be like, oh, do you know what?
Honestly, sending the messages is the worst part of the whole podcast thing. Anxious about it. It's just really, it's a very vulnerable thing.
Yeah, it's very intimidating, especially mm-hmm. when it's people that you don't necessarily know personally. Yeah. And like we'd spoken before, so mm-hmm. I was very happy to do this. I would have been happy to do it anyway. But
yeah,
I was actually going to ask you to do it because I was like, I feel like I really want to do this. Yeah. You know, I want to do a podcast with a girl and I want to enjoy it.
Honestly, yeah.
Like, have fun.
I hope you did enjoy it. I hope it was a nice, yay. Yeah, not too formal experience. I really enjoyed it as well. Yeah, it was funny because someone actually commented on one of your posts about having you on my podcast. And I was like,
I did see that. I was like, yes. I was like, I hope she asked me. I was like, uh-huh. should I ask her? And I was like, oh, I don't want to. I feel like I didn't want to intrude and be like, get me on your podcast.
No,
I don't want to.
If you'd have asked, I would have been like, yes, woohoo. No, but then I finally asked.
Loved it.
Yeah, yes, it's been really nice. I wasn't expecting to have you sit down for so long. So thank you for being so patient and talking to me for this.
I know it's been like how long? 2 hours. Oh my god, that's amazing.
Honestly, people. Oh, and also, we haven't said this, but we did have technical issues in the middle of this. So hopefully, I'm yet to edit this, but I'm praying we have that footage. If not, it's not the end of the world, but it will upset me.
If we do need to re-record anything, just let me know. I'm happy to do that, you know, if it needs to.
Just another reason to chat again. Yeah.
Exactly. Just talk more.
No, I love it. Thank you, Daisy.
Thank you.
Attention, those of you looking to go on a fun vacation and see the world on the cheap. Today, the U.S. dollar is worth even more in other countries, so there's never been a better time to travel outside the USA. The dollar is worth over $1.30 in Canadian dollars, and it's the same for Australia. You can fly there today and have fun and maximize your travel dollar. Your U.S. dollar is worth over $3 in Brazilian reals, and it's worth over $18 in Mexican pesos. Plus, in Argentina, it's worth over $27 in Argentine pesos. Just think of the bargains you'll get. And the way you get the cheapest airfare to any destination is by calling Tickets That Cheap. Save up to 75% on your foreign vacation tickets. Don't wait. Call now. 800-914-5288. 800-914-5288. 800-914-5288. That's 800-914-5288.
In times of economic uncertainty and chaos, your money means nothing. You may not even be able to get it from your bank or ATM. And the money you do have in the stock market will go down and down. What you can bank on is gold and silver. Gold and silver have been a reliable and trusted form of currency for thousands of years. Gold and silver have never been worth zero, and typically gold holds its value during economic turmoil. Call the Gold Hotline now and learn how to protect your money and your assets with gold and silver. And learn how to set up a new IRA or roll over your current one into a gold-backed IRA. Protect your money from the next market crash with gold and silver. Call now for your free gold guide.
800-557-7921. 800-557-7921. 800-557-7921. That's 800-557-7921.
If you served in the Marine Corps, by now you know about the contaminated water problem at Camp Lejeune. If you were stationed or worked at Camp Lejeune from 1953 to 1987, you probably have a lot of questions. We have some answers. You could be entitled to compensation. Billions of dollars are being allocated to pay for damages to anyone stationed at Camp Lejeune during that time. Unfortunately, it appears that officials may have known the contaminated water problem existed and did little to protect their men. The Semper Fi Code was not honored. If you or someone in your family has developed a serious illness, including various forms of cancer, call this Camp Lejeune legal support line right now. You can't turn back the clock and change what happened, but you can certainly call right now and learn your rights as a Marine. Here's the number.
800-485-5801. 800-485-5801. 800-485-5801. That's 800-485-5801.